Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson and CTP behind the camera. We've traveled to Encinitas, California for vacation, and then we got roped into doing things. Boo. I'm just kidding.
Boo-hoo.
No, we're hanging out with our friend Mark Devine of Seal Fit and US CrossFit.
Ooh, yeah.
If you've never been to SealFit.com, definitely check that out. We're going to be talking about the Seal Fit program, books Mark's written, just all sorts of stuff. It's going to be jam-packed, so don't go anywhere. But before you do anything, go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and that's how you support the show, really. So make sure you check that out, and you can kind of see what we do other than just podcasting. Now, Mark, we got up really early this morning.
Yep.
And we joined you for a workout. I was thinking it was going to be about an hour long. You said 7 o'clock, op wad. And I was like, I'm in. So we all got here.
Wait, was that amen or I'm in? I think I heard amen.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. He wasn't that motivated.
Doug, we all came out to train. Marcy, Doug's wife, she
killed it.
She rocked it. Yeah.
She stuck around the whole time. Ended up being 3 hours long. And it was a lot of fun, actually.
Still written on the board over there.
Still written on the board. Yeah, if you want to check that out, CTP for the folks. So if you're just listening, obviously if you're watching the video, you get to see this. Plus, I think Chris is going to put together a bunch of footage from us working out this morning and probably some other stuff. So definitely, if you're listening to this, you might want to go over to YouTube or go to the website, rather, and watch the video there. Now, Mark, my first impression of Seal Fit was probably in 2008, 2009.
Right.
Logging on the website, and we used to do Seal Fit Sundays at my box, me and a few guys that were just like, we want to do some extra hard once a week, and we would do that. And it was a lot of fun. I always thought about Seal Fit as just like high volume training someone might want to do if they're preparing for the military.
Right.
But after getting to know you and paying attention a little bit better, I've learned that that's somewhat of the goal, but really the real goal is training the mind, and that's what you specialize in.
Right. Yeah, I started with the premise that we've got to train the mind, and we use, obviously, physical training methods to get to the mind. It's the most effective way that we found, really, to get into someone's mind and to kind of forge that mental toughness. So, we're, you know, are we athletic trainers? Absolutely. But am I trying to train someone for the CrossFit Games? No. I mean, you guys do that better than me. But training someone for special ops really is a mental game. And the body obviously has to be there, and it needs to be able to handle the volume, and it needs to be able to work, you know, in extreme circumstances. It needs to be able to work when it's cold, wet, and tired, those types of things.
Yeah, I want to give everyone, like, I guess a rundown of what we did this morning.
Sure.
So, yeah, at 7 o'clock, we came here. We did a pre-SOP, so pre-standard operating procedure. One of the things that I really enjoyed that I thought was unique about how you presented the entire workout was when you briefed us, was that you said, hey, as I describe what we're going to do today, I want to visualize
right.
completing this. And think about, don't just sit there and listen, because I think a lot of people do that. You know, the coach is going over the workout. He's like, I'm going to do that.
Right.
They don't visualize doing it. And then, you know, kind of like thinking about what problems might exist.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm not sure which piece of equipment I'm going to use.
Right.
I don't know exactly how to do that movement. Or how long are we supposed to rest between these things?
Right.
There's all this stuff. And if you're walking through, as you're describing, I'm standing there thinking, okay, I'm going to do that. And then I kind of broke it down. And then I had some questions I might not have had otherwise had I just been like, eh. So I thought that was just from the very get-go, you did it differently than most coaches.
Right.
Where you said, hey, visualize it. I actually think that folds into being successful throughout the entire workout, too.
I'd love to talk about that for a second, man.
Yeah, go for
it. So,
perfect.
You know, we approach the workout, we try to win it in our mind before we start it. So that's an incredibly valuable component of the training. It may not take, you know, 3 hours. The real work is taking the other, you know, two hours and 55 minutes. But you can win it or lose it in that 5 minute pre-SOP.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And like you said, if you're not paying attention, if you brought some baggage along to the game and you're obsessing about it and you miss a critical component of the brief, then you may get injured. You know, you may fuck up a teammate. And furthermore, you're just not going to be mentally prepared. And so you win each segment in your mind. You're clear about what you got to do. You see yourself performing. You know, all these questions come up. How am I going to do? Do I need to scale? What's my equipment going to look like? And you answer those questions before you ever start training. Plus, when you get into the workout, you've had a very subtle performance indicator that you've been there before, which helps your mental toughness, your confidence.
Do you carry that over to the rest of your day? Like when you wake up in the morning, you see your schedule, you kind of like visualize the whole day. Just like the workout, you can see what's in front of you, you visualize it, and that way you're more focused when you get to, even if it's something as simple as going to a meeting.
And one thing I teach to my Unbeatable Mind students is what's called the morning ritual. And part of that is to visualize your day and to make sure that what you've agreed to aligns with what you should be doing. And so it's kind of a last chance to make some course corrections. You see yourself going through the day, you see yourself rocking it. And then once again, as you step foot into that day, you've already been there, you've already won in your mind, and it has a profound impact, you know, over time.
It's a fantastic idea. I think a lot of times, I hear this from a lot of people, and I've been there myself, is get done with a whole day of work and you're like busy the whole time, but you don't feel like you did anything.
Exactly. What exactly did I accomplish?
Like, what did I accomplish? And if you visualize that at the front end of the day, you'll go, okay, that lined up with what I visualized this morning. So then you'll have that feeling of accomplishment.
Right. And it helps you see like what's the major accomplishment that I want to get done today? Like today it's hanging out with you guys and, you know, getting to know you and training together and doing this. I mean, done, you know, check. And it's a successful day. We won. Now, if I want to accomplish some other task, project, that's all gravy, right?
It's all
that's a bonus, Miles, right? Yeah. To get very clear on what it is that's going to move the dial toward your goals, and those goals, of course, are tight and they're aligned with, you know, where you really need to go in life.
Did you get any bonus stuff done today while we were napping?
Yeah, I got a nap. That was bonus for sure. You knew that was happening, right?
Boom. No doubt. That was the first thing. And you know, what's interesting is I met Mark down in Miami a few months ago. And I recruited Mark first to do like yoga and swim some laps for a workout in the morning. And then I then told him hours later that I'd recruited people and he was leading yoga and he was leading the workout. And he's like, oh, right on. And, when we did that, we did like a little bit of a meditation visualization session. It was like really, it was really powerful for me. And I like doing a little bit of meditation, but I don't do as much visualization like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did this visualization exercise, like a warrior thing.
Right.
And I started using that. I don't do it every day, but I use it sometimes. Like if I'm going to a workout that's really challenging,
mm-hmm.
I go through like that, you know, the breathing
mm-hmm.
that we went through that day and just the visualization. And I visualize like completing each rep and hitting it hard and not having like that doubt in my mind, like whether I can do it or not, or, you know, the question of quitting or anything. And I've noticed that since I've done that, I've just been like, when I do that visualization prior to workout, like I'm much more confident throughout the workout and I'm just like, I just feel better overall.
Right.
I feel like I'm winning it as I go.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people talk about visualization. You know, we've been training it now for 7 years or so, but, they don't really do it. You know, it's just like training, physical training. If you don't do it, your body starts to fall apart. You start to atrophy.
Yeah.
You know, you can't hide with the physical training, but you know, I can't see you guys visualizing. So I don't know if you're doing it mm-hmm. and I don't know if you're doing it well. And so it's very difficult to teach it and to train it. It requires, you know, a feedback mechanism.
Yeah.
And we do that in our immersive academies because I have a lot of time to spend with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
But if you train it and you do it every day, it does have a profound impact. In fact, you know, I'll maintain that it's as powerful, and it's an incredibly powerful complement, or let's say an equal part to the physical training. And I, you know, it's really the next frontier for growth. Right?
Yeah,
I think
I remember
for athletes.
When I was in college, and I was in a sports psychology class, and we were doing the visualization stuff.
Nice.
And I was like, no, not nice. I was not very open at the time.
You weren't buying into it.
I was like, this is horse shit. I'm just going to go train.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, why would I do this if I could be training, type of thing?
Right.
But over the years, being injured and like visualization kind of helps.
Right.
But, I was obsessive anyway, so I was already visualizing, but didn't realize it was visualization.
Right.
Laying in bed thinking about doing snatches. You know, it's like, oh, that's visualization.
Yeah.
In a way. Right. But, nothing. You know, and it's funny as I look back on that class, I was like, man, I really wish I would have taken that more seriously.
Right.
And I wish I would have like taken that away sooner in life. But now later in life, I'm like, it's a huge It's a huge factor in how I do things. Mm. Yeah.
I was fortunate to have a swim coach at Colgate University who believed in visualization. This is, I'd be dating myself if I told you the actual years, but a long time ago. And I tell the story a lot because it was so powerful for me, but he had me visualize my my event, which was a 200 meter breaststroke, which is kind of a painful event. And he'd have me do it at night with a stopwatch. And, you know, it took me several months before I could get through the entire workout. I mean, that's how challenging visualization can be, to actually hold your attention, hold that visual image from, you know, the gun going off, jumping off the block, you know, doing your underwater pull out and swimming, touching the wall, turning underwater, swimming and doing 8 lengths and then touching the wall. Mm-hmm. So when I finally was able to do it, after I stayed with it because, you know, the coach begged me to. I actually tried to hang up my virtual swimsuit a couple times. I was like, coach, I just can't do this, man. He's like, stay with it. And I finally settled on being able to swim the whole race, and my time settled out to a time where, you know, I was getting within a fraction of a second every time I swam it. In my mind.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the last time I ever swam for the team was a championship race, and I'd had a big break in between because I swam that time. Yeah. I mean, I literally hit the time, was 3 seconds faster than my fastest time ever.
Oh, nice.
So it really kind of hit home that, yeah, hey, there's something to this visualization. So, you know, I kind of rolled with it on faith at that point.
Yeah.
And it had a powerful impact.
Yeah, it's not just anecdotal, but there's a lot of research to show that it's extremely, like, more beneficial than you would imagine. I mean, it's like 70 to 80% as effective as actually doing the activity. Like, it can be.
And I know with me, when I visualize things, I'm really trying to not just see it, but I'm trying to feel it as it's happening.
Right.
And I think that's one of the major benefits is there's some type of neural connections that are being made as you can feel your body going through that same range of motion that you're doing if you're swimming or if you're squatting or doing anything physical.
So there's two ways to visualize. You have first person and third person.
Right.
What's your preferred method?
I switch off between the two. Right. If I'm very, very comfortable with a skill, say, let's say I've mastered the skill, then I'll use the first person, you know, which is if I had a little helmet cam on. Mm. If I'm new to a skill, then it'll be third person, as if I'm watching myself from a different perspective. You know, you could actually make the argument that visualization could be more effective than actually doing the task if you're doing the task improperly. Right.
Right.
Because you can have perfect form in your mind, and when you practice with perfect form in your mind, that's better than practicing with shitty form.
Yeah,
you know, in real world, right?
So. Yeah, you can get perfect practice.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think someday they should have the visualized CrossFit Games where you just do the whole thing in your mind.
And I could totally win that.
I particularly like it if you're injured and you can't do the physical part. Well, now you can still kind of stay on your game, still practice in your head.
Right.
It's not as good as being able to practice if you're limited where you can't do anything at all. Right. Definitely not as good, but it's way better than not doing any visualization at all.
Good point.
It's going to keep you in the game, keep you thinking about it, keep you fresh.
Keeps you alert, keeps you fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he had us like visualize the workout as we went. Right. We were just standing there. And then we did, for the warm-up, we did box breathing,
right,
which is something I don't do a lot of.
You should.
And so I should. It's, I've done it here and there with some meditation, like with different people, but I've never like kind of done it on my own, but I've done it with some teachers. I thought that was really good. If someone wanted to find out more about box breathing, where would they look for that?
Sealfit.com and probably our online training. It's not something that we throw a lot of that type of training out to the public unless they come on and join, you know, it's like joining the newsletter at least. And so if you come and get on our email list, then you get more information.
It's not usually something like, oh my God, I'm going to go get box breathing information from SealFit. It's like you sign up for something else and you might get some information.
Yeah, you got to want to know what it is. You know, we lead with the physical and we want everyone to know that, you know, the physical training is pretty effective. But like at every workout, you know, it says pre-SOP and box breathing. And so if you're doing the workouts, eventually you're going to ask, what the hell are these things?
So what is it though for everyone that doesn't know?
No, box breathing essentially is it's a breathing method where we essentially breathe through our nose into our, you know, abdomen. And what we do is we'll just breathe in a box pattern. So we'll inhale to a certain count. And beginners, you know, I recommend 4 to 5. Mm-hmm. You'll hold it for a count, 4 to 5. So the same duration, then exhale all the air out of your lungs for a count of 4 to 5 and then hold the bottom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting. People are like, yeah, I breathe. Okay, everyone breathes. But how often do you practice breathing? It's kind of like practicing visualization. If you don't practice it, then you don't do it very well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people
don't do it
breathe
well.
Poorly. You can watch them compete, see them breathing poorly.
Right.
And like just can watch them melt down.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a couple of key things here. If you, first of all, it helps you relearn or learn for some people how to breathe through your nose and to be able to maintain that even as your intensity thresholds start to climb, right? And so during most training, you know, stages of the SEAL Fit WOD, I'm working on breathing through my nose and that deep diaphragmatic breath.
Yeah.
And if you breathe through your mouth, it kind of upsets the, you know, the balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide. And so you can get a little bit of toxicity, which will then degrade your performance, especially over the long term. The other thing, this is not known by a lot of people, but when you breathe through your nose, it generates a little trace element of nitrous oxide, which helps deliver the carbon dioxide and oxygen to your cells. So it actually kind of boosts performance. Hmm. Also, okay, there are, you know, nerve bundles. This one's most commonly cited. They're nerve, you know, behind your solar plexus region, kind of, I don't know exactly where. But as you breathe through your nose into your belly, then it stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which calms you down.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen when you breathe through your mouth. Because when you breathe through your mouth, it goes right into your upper chest. Right? If you breathe through your nose, it directs it kind of deep into your belly. So it's constantly sending a signal to calm you down. And then the act of focusing on the breath helps you concentrate, right? And so you're not thinking about what's for lunch or, you know, big old pancake I want to have for breakfast. Mm-hmm. You're actually thinking about
that. That was the toughest
breath.
Part. That was the toughest part, is blocking out that. I was visualizing pancakes and not the training, and the box breathing helped, I think.
Later on, the pancakes helped too. So we're not writing off the pancakes.
No, the pancakes are extremely, you know, beneficial for
important
recovery.
Part of the training, of course.
Yeah, earlier you were talking about, off camera, you were talking about like guys getting water sprayed in their face in training and trying to like really mess with people's heads and trying to teach them, even when they're getting messed with and there's a lot of distractions, like they're staying very focused. And so I'd imagine in combat, you're getting shot at, there's explosions, all kinds of crazy shit's going on, but you still need to focus on the task at hand you're not gonna be around very long. So you've talked about focusing a lot. What other things you guys do besides just meditating and calming your mind to help guys learn how to overcome distractions and pay attention to one single thing?
Well, all that, you know, all those kind of Eastern techniques are great if you're sitting at home and everything's safe, right? There's not mortars dropping all around you. Mm-hmm. And so spending time in breath control and visualization, I mean, that is money to help really prepare you for that moment in combat. But there's other ways, you know, that the SEALs and other special ops have learned to use, and that is to induce, you know, like simulated chaos, to induce, you know, a firefight, you know, where you're going to live, but we ramp up the intensity, ramp up the perceived risk. Mm-hmm. And so the Kokoro camp, you know, the 50-hour camp that you guys are going to enroll in and have a blast at October or sometime like that.
I'm all talk, Mark. That's one thing you'll learn over the years is I talk a big game and then I just never sign up for shit. No, I'm just kidding.
Kokoro camps works.
We're going to do it.
Think about some of the games athletes who've been through, like Valerie Volboro, Becca Voigt, Kenny Leverage, right, who got first in the SoCal regions, Lindsay Valenzuela. You know, 6 months off of Kokoro camp, because they all came through in October. Actually, Lindsay,
time to go.
Man, they hit it hard when regionals and the games come along, because they're just so focused and so able to control their mind in the you know, context of all that chaos. Mm-hmm. Now, it is a perishable skill, as you can imagine, just like the meditation and visualization. So it can, you know, over time, you might, you know, slide away from that ability. So that some of the tools we use, like you talked about, Doug, is, you know, we've got a complex task to perform, as both as an individual, as a team. You got to focus on your performance, you got to focus on teammates' performance, and there's conflicting instructions, and there might be even conflicting understanding of who's in charge, right? And so things get really murky, but at the same time, you have to perform. You have to figure something out, right? And so, you know, we have this saying that doubt can be ended by action alone, so you got to be moving. But while you're moving, we're even ratcheting up the chaos a little bit more, and the confusion with water, with sound, you know, with smoke and those types of things. So really kind of induce that, you know, the external chaos, so that what you're forced to do is go deep inside and find the internal control, the internal kind of peace, the internal warrior, so that you can, within that all that's going on, you can still make really good decisions. You can still maintain your cool and be a good teammate. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool.
And cold, wet, and sandy is a big part of that, I'd imagine, in training.
Yeah. Again, cold is a great equalizer. Mm-hmm. Sand, you know, if you're rucking or running on the beach and you got sand all throughout your clothing because you've been wet and rolling around in the sand, and now you're chafing, and it's hugely distracting and uncomfortable, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So again, we just find these little nitinoid ways to get under your skin, so to speak.
Yeah. So we did our, I'm going to walk through the workout so people get an idea of how our day went. So we did the box breathing visualization.
This is a 3-hour show?
So we had a 3-hour show. Yeah. Just post the workout. We did a strength portion. So we had a hang squat clean into a thruster. So 5 sets of 5, just kind of increasing weight over time. That wasn't so bad for us because we have a good strength background.
Roger.
And, you know, it was different than what I normally do, for sure. The reps were a little bit higher and very, very taxing. And then we rolled in the stamina, which is 4 rounds of 8 front squats, 15 weighted dips, and then 10 meter handstand walk. That got fun. By then, like by the third and fourth rounds, like my pushers were so tired that I was like nervous to go upside down because I was just gonna fall on my head.
Yeah,
It's all concrete here.
Yeah, it's all concrete.
No soft landings.
We did not bloody anyone this morning. I don't think
nobody died.
Nobody died.
Nobody died. No, yeah. And then we did what's that work?
Work capacity.
I know that word. We did work capacity. This was more of like the CrossFit.
Right.
So that was that 4 rounds, the front squats, weighted dips, and handstand walk was not for time.
Right.
So just make sure you had nice high quality reps and good heavy amount of weight. And then the work capacity was very CrossFit-y.
Right.
10 deadlifts, 50 double unders, 25 wall ball shots for time.
Right.
That was a lot of fun. And then durability, 3 sets. Of 800 meters, 5-minute splits there.
Right.
So,
800 meter run.
Yeah.
You forgot to say the run part.
Oh, yeah. It was not a swim.
No.
It was not a swim. It was not a row. Although, when I saw the 800, I was like, oh, fuck.
Could have been buddy carry. Oftentimes, we'll throw in the team drills and the durability.
So, all the physical training, we're all fairly used to, higher volume than what I normally do.
Right.
And then we went into the room over here and we did some warrior yoga,
mm-hmm.
and some more breathing,
mm-hmm.
and did some things that were, I say the hardest thing I did all day happened in that room. was a horse.
Three minute horse stance.
Horse stance. 3 minute horse stance. I was getting the shakes and I was shakes and the burn. It was pretty tough.
Yeah. Right. It's basically just sitting in a parallel squat for 3 minutes with your hands out in front of you.
Right.
Was getting the burn.
And that's a breathing exercise too, breathing concentration, you know, because the whole point is that, you know, you're not used to sitting in that depth for very long. We're used to the dynamic motion up, down, you know what I mean? Pushing mm-hmm. load. And so when you do that, you're working your muscles in a whole different range, you know, a whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of concentration. And the way to get to the concentration is through the breath, right? And so if you notice when you came back and we're breathing deeply and letting the breath kind of flow through you, which is using your visual capacity, then, you know, you could push it for another,
mm-hmm.
you know, 5-10 minutes. Also using the micro goals. That's how I get through that, frankly.
I
go 15-second increments. You know, I can make another 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Dude, I would say that was the first time all day where I was like, I started kind of like questioning, like I was like losing it. I was like, fuck this. I was like, I'm going to go as hard as I possibly can, but I was accepting failure in my mind at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 hours in to the workout.
Right.
And then we went and got pancakes afterwards, pancakes and eggs and bacon.
That made it all better.
So that was, dude, yeah, everything was good after that.
That
was good shit.
That was good. And then I went and took a nap. You don't know this. We went back and I was like, between the 3 hours of training and pancakes, it induced a coma. And I went back to the house and I hopped in bed. And when I woke up, I didn't even know who I was. I was like, it was one of those moments where you wake up and you're like, where am I? Type of thing.
Right, yeah.
So travel a lot, but I woke up and I'm like, I don't even know what like decade it year is. I was like,
that's awesome.
I was like, am I in the Navy? Like, that was like a decade ago. I'm like, what is going on? I'm like, all I knew is I had a sense of urgency. I'm running around the house. I'm like, we're supposed to go podcast with Mark. I don't know what's going on. But like, yeah, the hard training plus the carbs just ruined me. I had some crazy dreams. And then it took me like, I was like emotionally scarred from it. I was like, I'm sitting in the kitchen like, oh, I got to get my life together.
You know, yeah, I'd like to say something about that. You just hit on a good point. You know, like I said, it's not really about that. Opwad is not so much about, hey, you know, I'm going to try to, be, you know, max out my squat clean thruster. I mean, how often do we do that? It's about, that's a kind of a complicated movement. And, you know, we're going to do it a little bit different. And so we like to do things a little bit different. You know what I mean? And through that, and through the challenge of the duration, the load, the unique things, and also working together as a team, you do develop and tax, right, your emotional capacity.
Oh yeah, right? Absolutely.
Even just the thought of, if you're a good athlete like you are, you know, just failing on something, right? Like, you know, I knew we'd find something that you would fail at.
You definitely did.
Eventually, he was just standing still. Which can
definitely
be really
the hardest thing to do.
Hardest thing to do for a lot of people. Yeah. But so we developed that emotion. You know, one of my objectives is to develop people physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I toss intuition in there because over time, when you work together as a team, and you're in high-risk situations, you really cultivate that ability to listen to your belly and you know, trust your gut, so to speak.
So you've mentioned the team a number of times now. One of the things that I thought was really unique about the workout was after we got done with strength, and then we did the stamina portion, and we were going to do the work capacity portion, which is basically the Metcon, where it's rounds for time, which is more what people think about when they think of CrossFit, they think about doing Metcons.
Right.
You mentioned that when you brought the team together and you were explaining it, you said that it wasn't just about you as an individual.
Right.
It's also about the team. So you're not just trying to get a good time for you. We're here together. We're trying to get a good time for the team. We were sharing barbells and whatnot.
Right.
And so it was more about the group than it was about the individual. Right. And I feel like that's, from what I've heard, kind of a theme of the teams, of being a SEAL, being in the military. It's more about the team than it is about the individual.
Right.
So you guys kind of emphasize that in your daily workouts?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you have to develop this idea of co-opetition. And we are trying to bust our ass and do the best we can individually, but not at the expense of the team. And not, you know, just to get the win, especially if a teammate needs help or needs some encouragement, then, you know, you sacrifice yourself a little bit to get them through the sticking point because the whole team needs to win. And so, you know, training together as a team is a very powerful motivator, and it's a great way to grow as a human being. And so, you know, it's very different than being in a group of CrossFitters with a coach in front of you and everyone's just trying to get the highest score on the board. Right.
Yeah.
In most settings, you know, each one's just focused on the individual, and they're tripping over everyone else.
Right.
So team training, and what we try to do is, you know, really focus on the team, and it helps you expand your field of awareness. You know, you might have to share equipment. In fact, a lot of times, even if we have enough equipment, we'll force people to share equipment.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, like if I'm training and someone is just about to finish up, they're, you know, maybe they have 4 or 5 reps left on a certain set, and the next thing is an 800 meter run. I'll wait for them to get done so that I can push him and he can push me on the run. You know what I mean? So it's a different dynamic.
Very cool.
A co-opetition.
Yeah, I like that word, co-opetition. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break real quick. We can come back. We're going to find out Mark's secret breakfast for being a Navy SEAL.
Nails.
This is Andrea Eger, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrugged is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrugged.com and sign up for the newsletter.
And we're back in the most beautiful town in the United States.
Oh, I agree.
Encinitas, California. Don't move here because I don't want it to get crowded because I plan on moving here. So we talked about SEAL Fit being for the mind and not so much for the physical. I mean, we find mental toughness through hard physical training.
Right.
How did you like get into training people for this? And you mentioned Kokoro Camp earlier. What does Kokoro mean?
Kokoro means merging your heart and your mind into your actions. And frankly, when I first heard the word, it sounds
like a little hippie-ish for a Navy SEAL.
I know. Well, it's a Japanese word, and if we had an English word that could capture, you know, another word that might do it justice is saisu. Right, you're part of that. That was one of Amiko Sella's favorite words. Saisu is Finnish for like, you know, just you know, throwing your heart into the challenge and never backing down.
Yeah.
You know, it goes beyond grit. It goes beyond, hey, I'm not going to quit. Okay, that's a mental concept. The idea of Kokoro and or Saisu, because I think they're, you know, really similar, even though they sound nothing alike, is that you really drop into your heart and you throw your heart into it, and you're much less likely to even consider the quit option. Mm-hmm. And the best way to throw your heart into something is to have a really strong reason for being there to begin with.
Yeah.
And so being very clear, you know, in the beginning of Kokoro Camp, which is a 50-hour nonstop training, I like to ask people, like, why are you here? And I like to go down around the room and listen to the responses. And you can kind of tell who's really there, who's dropped into their heart, and who has that Kokoro spirit. You know, so if someone says to me, like a woman says to me, you know, I'm here to prove to my daughters that it's okay to be a strong woman, that I'm always going to be there for them.
Wow.
I'm thinking, I'll see you on Sunday.
Hell yeah.
You're going to rock this camp. You know what I mean? And then I might have a Navy SEAL candidate that's like, yeah, I'm here to prove how tough I am. Like, stand by. This is going to be a very long, you know, 6 hours.
Would that candidate might get some extra attention?
They might, yeah, just a tad bit, right? But they usually don't even need it. You know, they pretty much weed themselves out, because once you get through 6-8 hours of that training, you're just like, holy crap. You know, what have I signed up for? Yeah. Why am I here? And then you have to answer that question, why? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like with any serious challenge. And so that's really what I mean by Kokoro. Kokoro, you've already answered the question why. You've merged your heart into your actions, and you're just throwing your heart at it.
Mm-hmm. So you've got SEAL Fit, you got US CrossFit. US CrossFit's kind of the affiliate here.
Yeah, right.
And people
right.
can have a membership at your gym and take CrossFit classes. But that's just a small piece of what you guys do.
It's a pretty small piece, but it's important. You know, the CrossFit members provide, you know, daily energy, right?
Absolutely.
Daily burn here. And we run, you know, six, like a regular CrossFit gym, we run 6 classes a day. We consider ourselves a private membership. You know, we're not actively recruiting. We don't market at all. It's kind of a power of attraction.
Right.
And when people start training here, we're like, as soon as the first SEAL Fit Academy or Kokoro Camp comes on, if it's a new CrossFit athlete, they're like,
yeah,
what's going on over there?
What's happening at the gym?
Well, exactly. Well, what is that? And they're kind of interested. Like, so we explained to them. They're like, well, how do I kind of participate in that?
Yeah.
Be patient. You'll figure it out pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of the CrossFit members have stepped over the plate and participated in Kokoro Camp or our shorter 12-hour 20X program. And so we like it that way. It's kind of, you know, so all one family. It's just kind of one aspect of it.
So you have the Kokoro Camp, you have 20X program.
Right.
Which is, I guess, just it's an abbreviated version.
It's a 12-hour version of Kokoro for those, you know, let's say masters or, you know, for people like Mike Bledsoe who really can't handle the whole 50 hours. I don't think they can handle the 50 hours. We got that on tape.
Can I have that
segment to use on our blog? Just kidding.
You guys have those two programs. What other programs do you have?
We have these academies, SEAL Fit Academies. So we have a 3-day, a 5-day, and a 21-day.
Shit.
And that's where
you guys pretty much quit your job for the 21.
Oh, I love those because it's you know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you'd be surprised who comes to those. Like, we have guys, you know, who are in their 40s and 50s, you know,
yeah,
and they just want to experience, you know, what it is that it feels like to train, you know, immersively in this tight controlled environment for 3 weeks straight. It's very powerful. So they live here on site. We can put up, you know, 20 people on site. We feed them. They train from 5 a.m. till 8 p.m. Sometimes we go around the clock. And so, you know, whereas Kokoro Camp could be related to like Hell Week in the SEALs, even though it's very different, the academy would be like, I'm going to Buds.
You know what I mean? Right.
And, you know, the training is very much of a hard and soft. You know, we can't hit you hard, you know, for 12 hours a day. So you might do like the op wad followed by warrior yoga like you did this morning, followed by a class, you know, followed by a run, you know, a soft sand run, you know, back here, some stretching or, you know, a class on nutrition. So it's really well balanced.
I know a lot of people, I mean, I've talked to, you know, older than myself, and I guess now I'm getting older, guys my age who really, you know, they never did the military, and, you know, they're like, man, I kind of wish I would have had that.
Right.
Boot camp experience or that military experience, but sometimes people just don't want to commit 4 years of their life.
Yeah, it's a little,
so they can have
a little
that,
bit of a commitment, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like they want that experience, but they don't want that time commitment.
Right.
And hearing about, you know, something like this is like, and maybe you are considering the military, this is like a really, maybe a good option to kind of see what it might be like.
Yeah, I can't, on that point, it's so cool. We have a lot of guys who come and say, hey, listen, I'm thinking about the SEALs. I'm 27 years old. You know, I've got a very short window here. And, you know, they come to the academy and they cap it with the 50-hour Kokoro Camp.
Yeah.
And they come up to me and they're like, I'm so glad.
Oh, is that common to do 21 days? And then,
yeah.
Is that always the case?
The 21 day includes the Kokoro Camp.
Oh, shit.
And then the 1 week academy, the 5-day academy, we schedule the Kokoro Camp the weekend immediately following it. So it goes from Saturday to Thursday. So if you're bold enough, then you can enroll in both and, you know, kill two birds with one stone.
Dude, I just got a really great idea. I'm going to sign my wife up for this.
Right on.
And then I'm going to
go surf.
Yeah, go hang out. Just go on vacation.
What do you hope to accomplish by doing this?
I don't know.
A shorter marriage.
I was like, I did the military, so I'm like, hey, go ahead, do that.
You don't need that, right?
I'll, I know I would get a lot of benefit out of it, but I was like, you see what it's like. You're always complaining. No, I'm just kidding. Ashley, I love you.
Earlier, you mentioned that for Kokoro, room and board is included.
Right.
And you were kind of joking about it.
Right.
Explain how that works.
Well, room and board is included. You know, if you choose to sleep, you probably will. That means you quit. And we feed you. I mean, you have tasty MREs and all sorts of good stuff.
You're basically training for 50 hours straight.
50 hours straight.
There's no need for a bed unless you quit.
You know, it's funny. I don't know how many people know this who are Kokoro grads, but they're going to be kind of, it'll be interesting for them to hear that in the first few camps, I don't know if it was two or three, we actually did have cots.
Yeah.
And we actually did let people get a little bit of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And
was that worse for them, taking like a 30-minute nap?
Yeah, it was mostly just to kind of induce like what you experienced this afternoon, like waking up and going, where am I? What am I doing? And crazily disorienting, right?
Yeah. Not everyone knows this, but I did go to Buds. I didn't finish. But I was on the third day, I was on Wednesday of Hell Week.
Right.
And on that day, for my specific class, they let us sleep for like 45 minutes, 45 minutes on Wednesday morning.
Wednesday or Thursday changes.
Yeah, so they let us get asleep. And man, I've never been so exhausted in my life. And I remember laying down on the cot inside this tent on the beach. And I actually woke up and there was a guy on top of me.
Okay.
And
we don't need to go into that part of the story.
What had happened was like I had laid down and just totally like disregarded a sleeping bag. And I guess he looked over and I was like shivering in my sleep. He's like, I'm going to like help this guy out. He's dying.
Interesting.
And then, but when they woke us up, it was like with flashbangs, like came in, boom, boom, boom. You wake up and you're like, where am I? And you're just like running towards the beach with like your feet feel like bricks. Like, oh my God, what is happening? And like, as I figured out, like started like assimilating all the information, I was like, okay, it's Hell Week.
Right.
I've been doing this for a few days. I was like, I really wish I would not have gone to sleep. I was like, that was like the worst thing ever.
That brings up a really fun memory. There was the same exact scenario. Hell Week was, we got to sleep a little bit on Thursday, I think for about 45 minutes. And there was a guy in my class named Hara. We called him the Hara. Anyways, so Horror, he did a similar thing. He woke up and he just started bouncing off of walls like a pinball. Like he had no concept of where he was, who he was.
Oh, yeah.
And the instructors couldn't get through to him, you know, slapping him and throwing water in his face. And, you know, we're all out in the grinder already running toward the beach and he's still back there like bouncing off of walls.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And so they throw him into the ambulance and they're like, okay, this guy's done.
Yeah, there's something wrong with him.
D-U-N done. And so they take him over to the clinic and somehow like he starts to come to on the way to the clinic and he starts figuring out what happens. Right. And so the ambulance pulls up outside the clinic. He opens the door and just busts it out of there. He hightails it, sprints all the way across the base, back down on the beach, and just runs and joins the class.
Oh, no way.
The instructors are watching him coming like, here comes horror. What are we going to do? Just let him go. You know what I mean? He's got the presence of mind to run away from the medics. Back to join his class so he can finish.
Wow.
He was a great guy.
That was an interesting character. Yeah.
So for everyone that doesn't know anything about Hell Week, when you say that you slept on Wednesday or Thursday, you're implying that you haven't slept for like 4 days straight and then you get that little 40-minute nap. It's like how does Hell Week work?
45 minutes of sleep the entire week. That's not per day, right? So we start training on Sunday. We finish up sometime on Friday. You know, depending upon how the class is doing. And the sleep, like Mike said, is just to really mess with you.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time you're basically working out or you're like the guys on the poster behind you in the cold, wet water, just getting thrashed on in the waves.
A lot of time in and on the water. You're wet and sandy pretty much the entire time.
You're never dry.
Yeah. And so that seeps into you and really gnaws at your nerves. So it's a test of mental toughness, a test of your emotional resiliency, and a test of your willpower. The physical part doesn't matter after a while.
Yeah, one of the things
Kokoro is kind of simulating that.
Say again?
That Kokoro is simulating Hell Week.
Kokoro simulates 50 hours of that. And actually the volume of work in Kokoro is a little bit more than they throw at you in the first 50 hours of Hell Week.
Okay.
Because we can, right? We're not the Navy, and we also know that you're not going for 5 or 6 days. And so we throw a lot of volume. We've had SEAL candidates come back and say that Hell Week was was easy for them, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that's a relative term, but it was easy for them because they had been through that 50-hour Kokoro. It's kind of like this massive benchmark workout for them, you know?
Yeah. I remember not being as bad as I thought it was going to be until like Wednesday.
I actually started to enjoy Hell Week toward the end. I mean, it was pretty miserable in the beginning, but by Thursday I was enjoying it and starting to get stronger and it's kind of weird that way.
Yeah.
And there's a point where people basically stop quitting. It's like everyone quits in the first 2 days or something like that.
Sure.
And then if you can make it past the first 2 days, then you kind of just ride it out for the most part. Yeah. Everybody that's going to quit has already quit.
There's this really weird tribe mentality that develops at Buds, and maybe you experience this, Mike, but I mean, up until Hell Week, like, you don't really give a shit about anyone else.
No.
It's like, it's all about making it through Hell Week.
It's like, it's probably Wednesday morning, Tuesday night, Wednesday
morning. Yeah, and then halfway through Hell Week, you realize that everyone is quit, who's going to quit has quit or gotten injured, and now you have a team. And so you're like, okay, now I need this team to help me get through. Mm-hmm. And so then you really like have a 180-degree shift, and you're really focusing on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, the good leaders, you know, are focused on their team and, you know, working on helping them get through the training. And the bad leaders, when they get up and quit, you know, they take an entire boat crew with them, you know, because it's... Yep. If he can't do it, then how can I? I mean, all of these guys are looking at this guy and saying, "You might be a Naval Academy, you know, football stud."
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Throws in the towel.
One of the most terrifying things that I saw was this guy's second time to Buds.
Mm.
He was older. A lot of guys come back a second time and make it through.
Right.
And this guy was, you know, mid-20s, and we called him Superman because he was just like, he was stud. Like, he just crushed everything. And then we're in the tents waiting for breakout to happen on a Sunday night. And breakouts, you know, when Hell Week starts.
Right.
And someone goes, "We hear the bell ring before breakout even happens."
Where's Superman?
We're like, "What? Who fucking quit?" Yeah. Like, "Oh, it was Superman." I was like, that was a huge mind fuck for me. I was like, he knows what's coming. Yeah. He's already been here.
Right.
Like,
and he's quitting.
He just quit. He just checked out. I was like, Oh no!
This can't be good.
It was
maybe he was a plant.
Might have been,
because that would be a rather ingenious, you know.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. All right. So you have SEALFIT. Obviously, you have an unbeatable mind.
Right.
Not just a book, but you have a program.
Right.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that came about because I had a lot of folks who started to follow my blog and started to follow SEALFIT, but they, you know, they weren't ever going to step foot in here. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Something was holding them back. Maybe their age or their physical capacity, or maybe even a financial issue, whatever. But they were saying, you know, how can I participate in some of the warrior training that we do, you know, the soft part of it. And so, and I thought, well, you know, that would be really valuable to be able to package that and to give it to, or offer it to the folks who maybe aren't as driven by the physical training as we are. And so, I wrote a book called Unbeatable Mind, which became like a self-published kind of framework of the philosophy for how to develop mental toughness and a warrior's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I launched an online program. It's called the Foundation Course. It's Unbeatable Mind Academy. And, you know, it's delivered every month, right? It's one of these things that it's actually doesn't have an end. You know, I keep on offering new monthly content because it's just
awesome.
So much fun. And we just, you know, Jeff, who's our full-time video guy, you know, he films what's going on around here, and it's pretty cool, and it's rich, and so we just keep on, you know, it's kind of like plugging into what we do here at SEALFIT during an
academy. Even if you have done Kokoro or something like that, that'd be a good...
It's super valuable.
A good thing to be a part of, just to kind of like, as you were saying before, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
Maybe that's kind of just enough to keep you
The game. It's daily, weekly, monthly. I have people develop what I call their integrated training plan, and so I mentioned earlier these five capacities we try to train: physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual. Well, the reason it's so effective, because these five capacities, you know, most people do in a, you know, they touch on in a fragmented manner, right? You know, if I ask someone, say, "Hey, what do you do for emotional development?" I know you've got an answer for me, but most people don't.
No.
Right? And so what do you do for intuitional development? Most people, you know, don't have even a clue that it can be developed. And what do you do for spiritual development? Well, you know, I go to church on Sunday, or, you know, I believe in God and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm like, okay, this is all interesting, but if we don't train those things, then they kind of atrophy, or you just don't develop as a human being.
Yeah.
And the other way to look at this is you could be intensely developed physically, but mentally weak, or emotionally, you know, very, very weak. You know? And one example of that is we had a guy come into Kokoro Camp. This guy was a stud, right? He was just a stud. And within the first 30 minutes of training, he had quit. Because we had just got under his skin, right? And he wasn't finding his comfort zone. And his body, you know, I guess he didn't realize that it wasn't all just a performance art. You know, he was going to come here and be tested at all levels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ripped his shirt off and threw it in one of my coach's face and he was done. And it was all lack of emotional development, lack of emotional control that led to his failure.
Yeah.
Right. And so my principle is, or my whole philosophy is that we want to develop ourselves first, that we can develop and that we're capable of so much more. I call that the 20X factor. That's why we have called the 20X program that. And so if you buy into that principle that we're so capable of so much more, then the question is, how do we access that? How do we develop that?
Yeah.
One way to develop and access that is by actually deliberately training ourselves in an integrated manner. And my integrated training tools are physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual. And so each one of those has a series of methods and tools that I use to train. So I draw from yoga and the martial arts and breathing and visualization, you know, and mental drills and hard physical training and, you know, everything we've kind of talked about.
Yeah.
And then I build that, you know, I have the athletes and the executives and whoever's doing the program, I have them build their own five mountain training plan because I call those the five mountains. And so they, every day, every week, every month, every quarter, every year, they know what they're doing to develop themselves in those five capacities.
Yeah.
And they do it, right? And they stick to it and they develop the discipline. And so what they're doing is elevating this idea of training the whole person to the same level as eating and sleeping. And so it's not just, hey, I'm going to the gym to get a workout. We're going to the gym to do an integrated training session that includes all the things you did this
morning. You're going to work on your intuition
on whole person, right.
And emotional and
right.
All that. Can you give examples? Like if you someone wanted to, like say somebody was emotionally weak, I mean, are they training that through like the Seal Fit program or is there, you know, something that people can do to like
there's a lot of ways
shore that up?
There are a lot of ways. First, we've talked a lot about team training. Team training is a great equalizer, right? It exposes you and you develop emotional control and emotional awareness when you have a team that is not afraid to hold you accountable.
All right.
I love that about this special ops is like, you know, if you're fucking up, guess what? Someone's going to tell you you're fucking up, tell you why you're fucking up, tell you, you know, what you need to do to improve and then basically come back, you know, later and make sure that you did it.
Yeah.
And we've lost that in our society. You know, people don't hold people to a high standard, right? In fact, we try to push the standard down and then we even blow it off when people mess up, right?
Yeah.
And so by training with a team and coaches who hold you to that much higher standard and call you out in a very, you know, compassionate but, you know, deliberate and powerful way when you're, you know, when you do something stupid, right? Or when you're not stepping up. So that's one way to develop emotional control. Another is to take yourself to scary places that you don't want to go and you've been avoiding all your life. Right? And that's why the Crucible experience is so powerful. The 50 hours of training. I mean, I have people who literally have had their finger on the button for years and they're like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't push it. And they finally come like 2 years later and they're like, I don't know what held me back.
It's like, I wish I would have done this sooner.
I had done it sooner. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what I could accomplish in that time, you know, with all the mental toughness that I gained.
Yeah. One of the things I always tell people is like, you know, the most growth I've ever experienced has been in the most uncomfortable situations.
For sure. Yeah.
And once I figure that out, like I try to sign up for uncomfortable situations as much as possible.
Yeah. Bring
and
on
sometimes,
it.
You know, for me, who's been, you know, in a physical lifestyle, like sometimes it's not a physical thing
correct.
For me to do something uncomfortable. Sometimes it's signing up with to right. go hang out with this group of hippies or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
Center for Integral Wisdom.
That's right. That's right. Like, that would be a very specific case where I'm in a room of people who, you know, they're talking about things I have to really put forth a ton of effort to connect with.
Right.
And I'm trying, and I want to connect with it.
Right.
And, but that's something I, you know, I do lately.
Right.
You know, because I kind of like, I wouldn't say I mastered the physical, but like, there's only tweaks to be made at this point.
Right.
But now I'm like trying to develop more emotionally, spiritually.
Right.
And you know, emotionally, all that. And I guess intuitively, I've never thought about, you know, I've thought about training intuition, but I didn't think about putting it in a category like that.
Sure.
But yeah, definitely trying to challenge myself in those aspects now, but definitely some very uncomfortable situations.
For sure. You know, I mentioned earlier that I was at a 2-day relationship retreat with my wife recently. Mm-hmm. It's called emotionally focused therapy. And I tell you what, there's a lot of people who'd rather go through Kokoro Camp than do that. And it's pretty powerful stuff.
It would be easier for me to sign up for Kokoro than to sign up for that, for sure.
And so those are the kinds of things that we try to push people to do and encourage. You know, therapy is a fantastic way to develop your emotional life. And it's not really meant for when you're broken. I mean, it's useful for when you're broken, mm-hmm. right? If you have a major crisis, but if you get to that point, then, you know, shame on you, because you can be doing the work, right, to really develop yourself at a deep level now, right? And you just have to step out of your comfort zone and really embrace the suck and just go do it. And then guess what? It's over. And you've learned and grown. Huge insights accrue from that that then cross over and make you better at everything else and stronger person and all of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I said, yeah, the Unbeatable Mind, Seal Fit. What else? You got some books?
Yeah, so I've written, last year was a pretty cool year because I had a couple books that kind of coalesced, and actually I had to deliver the two manuscripts in the same month.
Damn.
It wasn't intentional, but it just kind of happened that way.
Right.
I'm not sure I'll ever do that again. Not recommended. But so I published The Way of the Seal. Yep. Which is really a leadership book, like mental toughness for leaders.
Yeah.
And I love that book. It's really cool.
I got a signed copy of that. No big deal.
Yeah. And then I already mentioned that I had self-published Unbeatable Mind, and that's more of the philosophy and the framework for the Unbeatable Mind training program. And then I had a training manual for SEAL Fit called 8 Weeks of SEAL Fit that I'd also self-published.
Yeah.
And my friend Brandon Webb, who's a SEAL author of The Red Circle, came and said, hey, you know, I think my publisher would be really interested in that. So I sent him a copy. He spun around and gave me a contract like 3 days later.
Oh, wow.
And so I rewrote that entire book, and I tried to tell the story of SEAL Fit and the training method through stories. It's pretty cool.
Well, good. Yeah.
And so that actually hit the New York Times bestseller list when it came out. And then I've got another book deal coming along for two more books from the same
You're going to publish those at the same month, right?
Probably. same day. We're going to see if we can do it in the same day down in the same hour this time. So I'm going to do another book on leadership and a book on warrior yoga, you know, the type of yoga that we promote here. Yeah. That we do, you know. Yeah. It's not like it's a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things that I've learned that we kind of, I want to try to codify it a little bit in that book.
So what actually makes the yoga you guys do different than just going to any old regular yoga class?
It's really the intent behind it, the audience and the intent. So, you know, the reason I've been calling it warrior yoga is that it's really for developing a warrior mind and using the yoga to support a warrior/warrior athlete. Okay, so whether you consider yourself a combatant warrior, you know, a military warrior or not, it's great for anyone who, you know, likes to do hard physical training, considers themselves an athlete. And so my approach is to include a lot of the tools that we talked about today through that practice and use that yoga as an integrated practice in and of itself. So we approach it from the standpoint of durability and developing, you know, core strength and joint strength, right, and flexibility, you know, which is not uncommon in a traditional yoga studio.
Yeah.
But we also focus heavily on the use of the breath, different ways to use the breath, right, both for, you know, stress control, for concentration, and developing warrior kind of spirit, the ability to really muster a lot of energy very quickly, very powerfully. And also we like to use it for stress, post-traumatic stress, you know, recovery, because yoga, when done properly with the right mindset and with breathing and visualization and the flowing movement, can be really good for, you know, taming a nervous system that's really out of balance, which is what happens with PTSD. Mm-hmm. So it's different in that we can modularize it. You know, I like to do drills. You know, I don't think, you know, most of us are really busy and we train really hard. And so I'm not trying to replace a workout with my yoga. I'm trying to say, okay, if you want to use this for durability, then here's a shoulder mobility drill and a hip mobility drill, which might include 5 or 6 different poses. So we do this combined with box breathing, combined with the visualization. You got yourself a really nice 20-minute practice, which is just going to be super powerful, you know, a bookend to your training session. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're on an active recovery day, then here you combine these three segments. You're going to do the breathing, the visualization, then you're going to do some, you know, a standing sequence to hit the areas you need, then maybe a seated sequence that includes some core development that will integrate some Navy SEAL style, you know, leg levers and flutter kicks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, finish up with your visualization and, you know, that sort of thing. So, it's going to be modular and try to develop, you know, the whole warrior archetype or warrior spirit.
Yeah, I've been to quite a few yoga studios, and I've usually been disappointed in, like, you know, it seems almost like a big stretching session.
Right.
Right? And, like, I've been disappointed because my understanding of yoga is there's a big spiritual component.
For sure.
And when you walk into, like, the average yoga studio, a lot of times there is no or is very little spiritual component, or the person leading the class hasn't developed enough themselves to, like, you know, help someone who's in class. I've noticed that.
Right.
I've done yoga with you twice now, and both times I felt a connectedness to, like, an explanation. Like, this is this is why, and then, like you've even kind of named some things that make more sense to somebody who's in the, you know, from a warrior background or something like that. They go, then connect. Oh, this is good for this.
Right.
I'm connecting the dots here.
Right.
And then also the visualization we've done and things like that really, you know, just kind of. You kind of bring more of a spiritual aspect to it because we already kicked our asses.
Right, exactly.
We don't need to get our asses kicked in the yoga studio, right? And that's another thing is sometimes a yoga teacher wants to kick my ass because I'm, you know,
a beard,
muscular guy coming in, not a little skinny twig.
Right.
And I come in and they're like, want to kick my ass? I'm like, look, my ass has been kicked already. I just need to, like, get in some good positions, good meditation, some good breathing.
Right.
But... it's nice to do that with you and get more of that.
Yeah, I think that you hit on a couple of key points. One is a lot of people think that yoga is fitness.
Right.
And it can be. There's a very popular style of yoga called Ashtanga. That's one of the systems mm-hmm. that I've trained with. It was originally developed in India to train warriors and young athletes. And so it's very militaristic. I mean, there's certain number of series. There's like six series.
It's the same every time, right?
Same exact every time. And you do it the same way every time. And you fit your body to the pose, right? And the way I teach it is, okay, well, if you want that, great. Well, the functional training part's going to happen on the grinder with the barbell and all that.
Yeah.
And then we'll do the yoga you know, more for the stretching and the concentration that type of style will develop, which is really powerful for warriors, right? But one of the things where I differ is, you know, we all have different body types, and I've seen a lot of people get injured, you know, when they go into a yoga studio and the teacher says, no, the pose is done this way. Here's the perfect form. Now, you know,
it's
like you mold your body to that form, and a lot of people get injured, especially with hot yoga where you can go really deep really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so my philosophy is that the form is designed to be molded to you, right? We use the form to explore the pose, right? And so I like to, for instance, rather than just going straight into a warrior two, then we'll like flow into it and explore the breath and the depth mm-hmm. until we get to a point where we're like, okay, today this is the full expression.
This is it.
This is the full expression.
Yeah.
We're going to stay here and maybe work on some breath control or something like that.
Yeah, I've heard that hot yoga is probably, you know, can cause some of the most injuries.
For sure.
You know, you just don't let the instructor push you somewhere where you shouldn't be.
Right.
Because it can be militaristic. And Ashtanga, too, like, is like, you know, you just got to, like, know your body and be tuned in. There are other styles that are,
for sure,
you know, a little less militaristic, as you said.
Right. And again, the point being that the yoga was originally meant for different purposes. And so, you know, what was necessary for the young warrior was not going to work for the 55-year-old householder, right?
Right.
And so that form of yoga was much more about developing, you know, inner strength, developing spirituality, right? And frankly, yoga is the oldest personal development program known to mankind. I mean, it covers everything from personal ethos and disciplines to, you know, breathing and physiological, you know, control, mental control, concentration, meditation, and ultimately what they call a union. Mm-hmm. Or bliss or samadhi, which is when you kind of yoke your ego with your soul, you know, and that's kind of beyond the scope of our discussion today. But it's interesting nonetheless.
Yes.
Like, you know, the yogis really had something going on, and a lot of that got lost when it was brought to this country, and mm-hmm. people just took it up as a fitness practice or just stretching. The other thing that I'll say is, you know, I was this way. You know, I resisted going into a yoga studio, except for the hot yoga where the girls were in their spandex. You know, that was okay.
Oh, yeah.
Once in a while. but I resisted going and you know, having to chant and having to do all the faux spirituality. Not to say that that doesn't, it's okay for someone if you're really in tune with that, right? But this is why, you know, people look at yoga and they think it's a religion. It's not. It's just it's a personal development program that uses gymnastics and breathing and stuff like that.
And if looking inside is a religious, then
exactly.
Holy shit.
Then we're all religious.
You're screwed.
Yeah. But true yoga has no religious component to it. And so I thought that with warrior yoga, it really should be from a Western perspective. And so, you know, that's why, you know, I've been teaching SEAL candidates who are now Navy SEALs this warrior yoga stuff since 2007. And they're like, they're okay with it because it's coming from a commander, you know,
right,
Navy SEAL.
Yeah, you made it cool.
And I made it cool. Yeah. And I took the foo out of the kung fu, right? It's just, you don't have to put a robe on. You don't have to wear flowers in your hair. You know, just come in and we're going to do this. And here's why, like you said, why we do this. And here's why it relates to you being a good leader and a good athlete, right? And a good person.
Yeah. I remember when I was younger, it was, you know, yoga, whatever.
Right.
And I actually had a Navy SEAL instructor. Like, hey, you guys should probably try out some yoga.
Oh, no kidding.
In your free time.
Right on.
And I was like, and that was the first time I ever tried it. Was over on Coronado. And I was like, I can really identify the benefits, even though I was 19.
Right.
I was like, this is really beneficial.
Yeah.
And so the thing is I would have never tried it. I would have been too macho for it.
Right.
Had a guy that wasn't a Navy SEAL like suggest it.
Right.
Yeah.
So while we're all waiting for your book to come out, is there any like free routines or anything like that you guys have on your websites?
All of that is in our SEAL Fit online program. And I don't know if we have any free videos, but I'd be happy to offer one to your Barbell Shrug community if you'd
want
to hit me up with that.
Let's figure that out. Yeah. That'd work well. Cool. All right, so you got anything else we haven't touched on? See, probably. Sounds like you got I got this other program.
No, we do also run NavySeals.com, which is the the Spec Ops, you know, website for the SEALs.
Yeah.
It's not officially the SEAL website, right, but you know, most candidates will come there and we have an online store where we sell cool gear and watches and shit like that.
Awesome.
So if you come to Kokoro Camp, that's where you get your boots, by the way, in your
hands. You told me I wanna cover this. You told me like when people finish a certain level of training, I don't know if it's Kokoro, but you have more advanced training and people actually like they get suited up.
Oh yeah,
you like, just very military wise. Yeah,
reminded me of something important. So we're on the cusp of launching a certification program for what we're calling certified.
Totally forgot about that certification program I'm working on.
Minor detail, right? It's the way I roll, man.
Guy.
I just completely forgot about that one. So we're certifying SEAL Fit mentors. And this is really near and dear to my heart because before I launched SEAL Fit, I launched a nationwide mentor program for the actual SEALs, for the Navy recruiting command. And I had, through my company, US Tactical, it was on contract and I had SEALs out in recruiting districts.
How many businesses do you have? This is ridiculous.
Too many probably. I'm trying to streamline, you know, focus. But that business went away. Blackwater came in and they said that we'd rather have that. And so we're going to take that from you. And they were like a $1 billion company.
Probably wasn't a bad deal for you.
Wasn't much I could do about it. Yeah. Anyway, so that kind of led to me launching SEAL Fit and, you know, training civilians instead of the military. But anyways, fast forward, I'm now launching a SEAL Fit civilian mentor program. Mm. And the reason I chose the term mentor instead of coach is to differentiate it from the athletic coach.
Right.
As we're going to be doing SEAL Fit training, but it's really about developing character. Right, and so we're already getting a lot of traction in training high school sports teams. Like I'm going to in college too, so I'm going to University of South Alabama next week and training them. And we've got a thing going with Nike next month where we got eight high schools here in Southern California, which are top performing high schools like Servite and St. John's Bosco, and we're going to train them. And these are like mini 20X programs, 4 to 6 hour 20X programs. So really into that. And so I want to go out and train an army or a field force of certified mentors.
Yeah.
And it won't be a simple certification to get. It'll require SEAL Fit Academy and then a follow-on one-week academy. And you got to do Kokoro Camp and you got to get blessed by us. But very achievable for someone, you know, who's really into that. And then you go out back to your community and you can activate a SEAL Fit program where you can take people at a much deeper level with our support and train character.
Wow.
Work with corporate teams, work with you know, high school teams and with individuals.
Sounds cool as shit,
so
man.
So that should be pretty cool. I'm excited about that.
I want to do it now.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Got to get to your Kokoro camp first.
Yeah, it'll be easy. Oh, well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. So if people want to find out more about you and about what you offer, where should they go? I think we covered a little bit, but I just want to like quick summary.
Sealfit.com is probably the most comprehensive. Tons and tons of resources. Check out my blog. And, you know, we have a weekly workout, a weekly podcast, a weekly TV episode, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So that's really probably the best place to go. And then if you're, you know, if say you're an executive listening to this and you're not, you know, willing or interested in coming, get your ass kicked, then unbeatablemind.com is where you can learn about the books.
And sign up for the camp. Program. Don't be a baby.
It's not for everyone. Yeah, and the books can be found anywhere books are sold, like Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
That's cool, yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Twitter or Instagram or Facebook?
Yeah, we have all that, too.
Just look it up.
SealFit.
It's at SealFit.
So like you, I've got someone else who handles the Twitter account, so if you see, if you get insulted by a tweet that comes by, I know nothing about it.
Yeah, one of your guys was picking on me on Instagram yesterday. I was like, oh, I'll come show him.
That's awesome.
And then I almost threw up during the workout. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Had a blast.
It's been a great day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not over yet. We still got dinner tonight.
We're going to have some din-din, right?
And yeah.
Maybe a beer.
Maybe a beer. All day at Seal Fit. It's not a bad thing.
No.
It's tiring, but rejuvenating at the same time.
Indeed.
All right. Make sure to go to barbellstruck.com, sign up for the newsletter so you can get notified anytime we do one of these really cool podcasts. Thanks, Mark.
Ooh, yeah. Awesome, guys.
That was good.
Good shit.
People are going to love that because that's a lot different than what we normally do.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, talking about all the mental toughness, I think people are going to like.
Yeah.
Because people focus so much on the physical, and then we're going to like post that, and they're just going to blow their minds, I think.